you, maybe we could take a moment. Bless you, Joe. You've got Kelsey on high alert over there. But let's just turn within and invoke the presence of our teachers, those that have inspired us, the various master saints and prophets that have inspired us and encouraged us along the way. And I especially want to invoke those who are in need of peace and compassion and love, and to be uplifted in the middle of life's strife. We invite them and we send to them whatever peace and merit may be generated by our gathering here together. And let us begin with the Sufi invocation of an icon. Towards the one, the perfection of love, harmony, and beauty, the only being united with all the illuminated souls who form the embodiment of the Master, the Spirit of Guidance. Blow into this cup your hands with these sacred sounds from the mandala of your lips, and offer it as a blessing around and through you. Well, the inner life. When I took initiation from Rashida Barrett now decades ago, this was the first text that she asked me to read, the inner life. And of course, it's been guiding me and all of you that are here, I'm sure, all along the way. It offers some continuity for those in our myriad circle, then kind of thematically a body of teachings that we're working on. But I think it's always good. It's very good for me to review this and remind myself of the significance of the inner life, because it's so easy to get captured in the net of life by external circumstances. So most of the words I'm reading are from an icon, and I'll be sure to tell you when I go back and forth between my words and others' words and Murshid's words. So Murshid says, and I think this first sentence is so interesting because we remember that Murshid passed away in 1927, and yet here is the first sentence. In these modern times, people consider an intellectual life, I'm going to close my chat window, it's slightly distracting for me, and I'll open it again at the end, but I'm just going to do this right now. Okay, thank you. In these modern times, people consider an intellectual life or a life of manual labor a normal life. Some call common sense positivism, believing only in the powers that prove to be real to our senses, in all that is perceived, felt, and experienced by our mind. Well, I think most of us realize how unreliable our mind can be, our thoughts and feelings can be really colored by experiences that have nothing to do with reality, but that's another subject. So Murshid goes on to say, for this reason, despite great unceasing progress in the material world, we have closed the door to another world of progress, which can only be entered by opening the door of the deeper side of life. We see what is before us, but we cannot see what is behind us, or we might also say we cannot really see what's in us. Today, there seems to be a greater need of the inner life than ever before. It is the head quality which is developed these days, whereas the heart quality needs to be developed to bring a balance to life. I remember one time I was doing some inner work and spiritual guidance with Prajapati O'Neill, who used to be called, they called it the Dean of Universal Worship in the Sufi Order. And I was taking up quite seriously and deeply my studies in Tibetan Buddhism. And of course, there's a lot of heart quality in that as well, but there's a lot of training of the mind. And so he said, you know, it's like you're on two tracks. Buddhism, which is more, can be more intellectual, depends on what school of thought I happen to be in, a mystical stream of Tibetan Buddhism. But, and he said, there's this mind training and this heart training at the same time. And Murshid is saying exactly that. We need both. We need to train our mind We need to be balanced with the heart. So he says, Mercer goes on, many consider sentiment to be unimportant, something that should be kept apart from the central theme of life, which today is intellectuality. No one who has given a thought to the deeper side of life will deny for a moment the power and inspiration that arises once the heart's kindled. Deep insight can come from that. I'm going to turn, what am I doing here? Let me quit this email. I'm so sorry. I just don't want this bothering us, but it kind of is, isn't it? Hold on. A lot of little interruptions. This is good. Keep us on track. Train our mind. So Murshid says, a person with heart quality need not be simple. No one needs to discard one's intellect. The quality of the heart and the development of that produces a perfume in the intellect, like the fragrance of a flower. Morals learned from logic are dry morals, a fruit without juice or a flower without fragrance. The heart quality, it produces naturally virtues, which no one can teach you. We can't be taught this, but a loving person, a person with sympathy in one's heart, teaches morals through oneself. Once we know this, we become an example of it. Like Gandhi said, be the example you wish to see in the world. It's a balance of thought and feeling which makes the soil ready for sowing the seed of the inner life. A balance of thought and feeling. So I wanted to work with this practice, which I'm sure all of us have worked with, maybe even hundreds of times through our path. But I want to take a little bit of time to talk about each word more deeply. The practice is Ishkala Mabudala, tuning the heart towards God as our lover and our beloved. Now I would like to read first a few words of Murshid's, and then I kind of want to dissect this, and then we'll reassemble the sacred phrase. Murshid says this: mystics of all ages are not known for their miraculous powers or for the doctrines they've taught. Think about this. This is very important. They're not known for their miraculous powers or for the doctrines they taught, but for the devotion they showed in their lives. Their example, that was what we remember. The Sufi of the East says to oneself, Ishkala Mahbud Allah. This is a little bit different than maybe we've said it. You heard it, Ishkala Mahbud Layla or Ila, but Murshid gave it Ishkala Mahbud Allah, which means God is love. God is the beloved. These are Murshid's words. In other words, God is who is love, lover, and beloved. So this is also an abstract thought unless we come to realize it through our practice and our own inner experience. He goes on to say, when we hear the stories of the miraculous powers of mystics, of their great insights into the hidden laws of nature, of the qualities which they manifested through their beautiful personalities, we realize that these have all come from one and the same source. And what is that source? It's devotion. Whether we call it devotion or whether we call it love. So it's from that heart quality, that love quality. So now let's think about this. He goes on to say, the atmosphere that an awakened soul produces lives many centuries in the world. Think of Jesus. Think of Buddha. Think of Muhammad. Think of Rumi. Lives for centuries in the world. And Murshid too. We've only reached the milestone of our first century, but I'm sure it'll go on and on. So the atmosphere that an awakened soul produces lives for centuries in the world, unbroken and unpolluted. The sky takes care of it and preserves it for generations. There were many times I talked with Pure Murshid Hidayat, an icon. And he was very concerned about the future of the message. You know, what form it would take. There were many influences. I know I travel sort of between the different Sufi organizations, and Murshid's words get changed and so on and so forth. He was greatly concerned about that. He said, who would dare change the great compositions of Mozart? Just changing one note changes it. So this was his feeling. He was also a musician. But then I'd always gently remind him, because there's a phrase of Anayat Khan's that says, don't worry about the message. The message will take care of itself. And that's what's being said here, that the sky takes care of it and it preserves it for generations, these beautiful messages by awakened souls. So now let's look at each word within this sacred phrase, Ishq. We know, perhaps you do, if not, you've maybe sensed it. Ishq comes from Arabic and it means love or passion. So passion, this burning desire to feel this connection, to come to this realization. Of course, Allah is the seed syllable. In Tibetan Buddhism, we call it seed syllable. So it's this one word that contains all the other qualities. And from that, like that thought, that point from which everything is manifest, Allah is that. Mahabood is the one who is the object of our love and devotion, Mahabood. Again, then we say Allah, seed syllable of all the divine qualities. And at last, it becomes Ishqabala Mahabood Allah. Now, it can be said of this phrase that it is a love, lover, beloved, knower, knowledge, known. These are all hierarchical steps. So first we experience natural love. This may be love for family, love for nature, love for whatever, for study, for, you know, it tends to be rather naturally innate, born in us from a child, mother, father, we love, they've given us nurture and so forth. Maybe place, city. Then it becomes intellectual love. So we want to learn more and we want to study it. So we might hear something in the beginning, we maybe heard a phrase of Murshid's and it's like, I want to know more about him. I want to know more about his teachings. What does that all mean? I want to study. And then it transforms, or we could say becomes integrated into this divine love that hopefully gets planted within our hearts and starts to become expressed through the art of what Murshid would call the art of personality. So it's good to look at that, because I think in different, you know, these aren't linear things. They are circular, I think. And we go through these different phases throughout our spiritual development and through our life. So natural love, intellectual love, and divine love. And we could translate that into English by something like this. You may find your own words, but this is what came to me. Oh God, you are my passion. You are my love. You are the object of my love. May I see, know, and love you manifest through all names and forms. We come to that realization. So let's say this, and Moinuddin, he's kind of taught me that he uses a lot of these phrases with the motions of the zikr, which I think is very beautiful. So thank you for that, Pir Moinuddin. And we could do that here. We could start with sweeping left to right on the ish. Head comes up, Allah, down, Mahbood, and up, Allah. So it's like we surrender with our ish, you know, we give our passion to God alone. And then Mahbood, it's God alone is the object. Allah is the object of our passion, of our love. And bring it into the deep heart around the navel area and then rise again with Allah. We could just do this 11 times. Those in the Murid circle can do it more with your personal daily practice. So here we go. Ishq Allah, Mahbood Allah. Ishq Allah, Mahbood Allah. Ishq Allah, Mahbood Allah. Ish Allah, Mahbood Allah. Ish Allah Allah Ish Allah Mahmud 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 Allah In the words of Anayat Khan, he says this. There are three steps. Again, there's these three steps, a kind of hierarchical order. There are three steps which one must take in order to come to the spiritual life. The first step is knowledge of nature and the character of another. Say that the Sufi point of view is taking up one's own point of view and the view of another. It's not easy to do, but that's what a Sufi tries to do. I just interject here one more thing that, of course, the third Sufi thought is, here's one holy book, the sacred manuscript of nature, the only scripture which can enlighten the being. I think sometimes when we think of nature, we think of something in the external environment, but nature is also human nature. It's our human nature. It's human nature that we witness. So there's something of that too. There's one holy book, the sacred manuscript of nature. No doubt the natural world has so much to teach us, and it does teach us so much. And we're blessed for that. May it live on and on in good health. May we tread lightly on this sacred earth. Murshid's words, a seeker takes the first step in the path of truth when one is able to understand others or another fully and find the solution to every problem connected with them. Now, I'm sure there are all of you here. I know you, some of you I know very well, and you have your own innate wisdom and your own innate experience. And from that, you have a certain kind of love or sympathy or affinity for others. And finding everyday problems, a solution and trying to help each other. We do that. We do that naturally in our families, in our communities, perhaps in our place of work. So this is a natural evolution where we start to think about others and try to be helpful. Then Murshid says the next step is to have insight into the nature of things and beings. So observing all the creatures of the earth, the rhythms of nature, observing other people, you know, it's great to do that in airports or whatever. You can study the way people walk, the people talk, the expressions on their faces. It tells us something. Then Murshid says, to understand cause and effect, and to be able to find the cause of the cause, or the effect of the effect, to be able to see the reason of the reason and the logic of the logic. Then a person is able to see the good side of the bad and the bad side of the good. And when a person is able to see the wrong side of the right and the right side of the wrong, then a person has taken the next step on the spiritual path. Things aren't always so, what's good for one maybe isn't good for another. So we have to consider those things in balance. Develop insight, the inner side of life. Now we could think of the first aspect, as I said, this first one is sort of having this affinity for others, a love, a kind of affection, sympathy, a tuning in, as you will. But this other part, seeing the good and the bad and the good, the right and the wrong and the right and the wrong, the wrong and the right, takes a little bit of, we could say, concentration. But kind of a drawing inward. It could almost be a kind of contraction to really examine something and try to gain insight into it or through the experience. It's a kind of distillation. Now, the third step on the spiritual path is to rise above pains and pleasures. This is a kind of indifference, which in Tibetan Buddhism, I like the word equanimity. It's sort of beyond attachment or aversion. We can rise above the pains and pleasure of life, to be in the world and not of the world, as Rabi of Basra said, I'm eating the bread of this world and doing the work of that world. And to live and to not live at the same time. What does Murshid mean by that? He goes on to say, again, it might be confusing, but we'll talk deeper about it. Such a person that who's living and at the same time not living has become a living dead. Well, that sounds scary because it sounds like we're all becoming zombies or something. That isn't what he means at all. A dead person who's living forever. Dead to what? Dead to these external waves that constantly bombard us. We're more steady than that. We're like the deep sea, where we have a calm underneath that all. And in other words, it's like dead maybe to this world, we could say, but living in the eternal now. We could think of it as Yahayo, Yahakayo, oh, everless, lasting life. This is what we're talking about. Or as the Sacred Heart of Jesus and Mary with one heart, being, you know, pointing to the heart and above. So this is the pathway to this kind of ascension of consciousness. Murshid's words again. Immortality is not to be sought in the hereafter. If it is to ever be gained, it is gained in one's lifetime. Immortality is not to be sought in the hereafter. If it is ever to be gained, is to be gained in one's lifetime. In this third stage of development, one is able to attain happiness, power, knowledge, life, and peace within, independent of all things outside. You know, when I read the stories of Gandhi and people like Sri Aurobindo, the ones that were kind of these liberators of India, you know, their great insight. I mean, they were put in the most horrible prisons as political prisoners during the liberation of India. They went in as politicians sometimes, or intellectuals or writers. And Gandhi was an attorney, and Sri Aurobindo was educated as Oxford in English literature, you know, so they knew how to write, put together, you know, legal briefs. But it was when they were in prison in very difficult situations that they really gained a kind of enlightenment. So it was like, again, that drawing in, being contained. And when they came out differently. So we're going to work with this practice now. I'm sure you also are familiar with it, but I'd like to put a little bit of a different view on this practice. The practice is yakabit. We hear that as the constrictor or the contractor, and yabasit, the expander or the releaser. But I'd like to talk a little bit about these practices, and then when we work with it, we'll work with it with a little bit of a different concentration. So kabat is derived from the root word kabd, which denotes decrease, to take, to hold, to seize, to grip, to catch. These are the kinds of attributes it has. It is also means like holding, the holding of something in one's hand, such as the handle of a sword. Well, that's so significant, because then when we think of St. Michael, the archangel, what's he doing? He's defending us, and he has that sword in his hand. He's ready to slay ignorance, let's say. St. George of the Cross, same. He's on horseback, you know, the dragons below him, and he's got his arm up like this, ready to cut and save us from the mouth of the dragon. Manjushri, the Buddha of wisdom. In one hand, he has the holy scriptures, and in the other hand, he has the sword of intellect, ready to cut through ignorance, birthing wisdom. It's like we are cutting through the false self so that the real self can come forward. And it's the battle of through ignorance, through these veils of illusion, that if we're willing to move through them. You know, St. Teresa of Avila calls it the interior mansion. She describes it in that way, this evolution of consciousness, of the heart, of the mind. But it's like cutting away ignorance, though the unobscured wisdom is revealed in all of its glory. So may we work with this in this way. And now I worked with our Me Read Circle last month with this. And we thought of it as like, and we're starting to work with this body of teachings on the art of personality and character building. And so we were looking, trying to look at our
I've lost Neria's sound.
Okay, so where what do I need to go back to, please? Where was I last heard?
You were just getting into the practice you were working with the circle, your circle.
Okay, so we were working with our circle on the art of personality and character building. And we decided we needed to take up, do self-examination, you know, mahasati, where we would look at ourselves and are there things that we can take in hand, that we can take grasp of regarding things that we wished to refine or develop perhaps control within our personality that would help us become better people, you know, more loving people, more giving people, more thoughtful people. So we were looking at this and we were thinking of Yakabit as drawing those things in and holding them, constricting around them, like the earth does around certain things that what comes from it is a beautiful gem, a diamond, a ruby, an emerald, but it's from this tightness, this constriction, this pressure that those things are birthed. So we're talking about that. And that's what we should try to do, is try to draw those things in and hold, take ourselves in hand. And then, I'm sorry, it was my mouse, I think, clicked that off. And then we're working with Basit. And Basit, then what we do is Basit means the one who stretches out their hand in a gesture of graciousness or goodwill towards another. So we're drawing this in. And then when we release, it's almost, I described it last time as like, you know, when you see those spy movies where they have this black velvet patch and they open it up and these beautiful diamonds just glistening full of light pour out forth. That's what we want to do. We want to create this beauty within so that when we open it up, it's just light and love pouring forth. So this idea of Basit, then that expansion, I think is often the short version before you, the expander, but it's the stretching of the hand and gesture of graciousness and goodwill to others. And now this is the little piece that comes from that text that I quoted in the chat window, which again, you might want to grasp and see if you can find a copy. There may even be a PDF of it out there on the internet. So this is what the translation is of Basit in that text. It says, even at the beginning, your inner pearl is mixed. Think about it. The inner pearl that we receive from Allah, from God, is placed within the soul, but it's mixed with bestial and predatory attributes. Once it has been sifted by the sieve of good fortune and struggle, not just good fortune and struggle, it will be worthy of the neighborhood of the Sultan's presence. The Sultan's presence. It is a heavenly pearl on the face of earth. Oh, what if we could be that? That heavenly pearl on the face of the earth. Oh, what an expression of this state. And what is that expression? How do we know? Well, in the text it says, recognition is the radiance of lights flashing in the hearts and lifting them away from faults to the unseen things. So So again, that's from Repose of Spirits, a Sufi commentary on the divine names. Okay, so shall we do this practice again, just 11 times, but feeling that drawing in on Kabut, and then that release of beauty and goodwill and love. Murshid says, love, harmony, and beauty. Ya Kabut, Ya Basit, 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 Ya Kabut, Ya Basit. For a few breaths, breathe in silently, Kabut, with great concentration. Hold it for a moment and then breathe out Basit. Kabut, Ya Basit. So Murshid's words again, an icon, our pure Murshid. The spiritual knowledge, which has always been sought by awakened souls, will always be sought by them. In the past ages, the seekers looked for a guide on this path. Guide, a Murshid, an imam, a priest, a rabbi, whatever. But we looked for a guide on this path, a path who initiated them, the seekers, into the mysteries of the deeper side of life. And once the secret was revealed, it no longer remained a mystery to them. The person who has not yet achieved or awakened to the inner life and the inner side of life has not experienced life fully. Such a person has only seen one side of life. Maybe it's the most interesting side, but it's less real. I think of it how we are so interested in being entertained. This is now Nuria. But you know how much we pay our ball players to play soccer, football, baseball. And yet we have spiritual groups and churches struggling so much. We have teachers that can barely make a living. It's where are we putting our value? It's certainly on entertainment and this external world. But those of you here, I'm preaching to the converted. You understand all this. But in turning this in, it's great to have fun and to enjoy our life. Of course we should, but and I'm not saying that about perhaps any of us, but if we look around, you know, where's the commodity in our lives? And we shouldn't judge others because some people are just in this life or in maybe even future lives, if you have that idea of incarnation. it's coming. God willing, it'll come. But anyway, Murshid says, maybe that's the more interesting side of life, the outer life. But he says it's less real. The one who's experienced both sides of life, the outer and the inner, has certainly fulfilled the purpose of their life on earth. And then Murshid goes on to say, and this is the closing statement, in point of fact, truth is simple. It is he, it is we, he, she, it, whatever pronoun you want to use. It is we who make it difficult for oneself. For all other aspects of knowledge we get from the outside. But truth is something which is within our one self. It's hidden there. It's like this, oh, what's that beautiful quote? Someone can help me. You know, I was a treasure that wished to be known. You know, I don't even remember the source of that. Maybe it was Bastami or maybe it was Jesus. I don't know, but it doesn't matter. Sorry.
The Quran. It's from the Quran.
Thank you. So, you know, I was a treasure and I wish to be known. It's true. It's inside oneself. Murshid goes on to say, it is something which is nearest to us, though we imagine it's the farthest away. It is something which is within, though we imagine it's outside. If I go there, or I talk to that person, or I read that book, you know, all those things certainly facilitate it, but ultimately it's within. It is something which is nearest to us, though we imagine it is to be the farthest. It's something which is within, though we imagine it to be outside. It is knowledge itself we want to acquire. It's insight itself we wish to acquire. Thus, the seeker is engaged in this continual struggle with oneself. Might be struggles with others, or struggle within life, or struggle with this outer and inner world. But, and at the end, the journey is always one and the same. One always finds that one has traveled because it is their destiny to travel. It's our destiny. And we discover that the starting point is the same as the goal. These little children unlearning. Now I pulled a few quotes from the Bowl of Saki, which I thought I'll just read these phrases. And again, they'll be available in the study guide at sufi-message.org. I always post these notes and references for you. So this is from March 12th. The source of truth is within. We are the object of our realization. The source of truth is within. We are the object of our realization. From April 9th, things are worthwhile when we seek them. Only then do we know their value. Things are worthwhile when we seek them. Only then do we know their value. The adept values one's object. The adept values one object of attaining the inner life more than anything else in life. This is from The Alchemy of Happiness on the Inner Life. But this quote is, the adept, or we could say the seeker, or we value one's object of attaining the inner life more than anything else in life. And again, let us end as we began, invoking all those precious, holy, devotional beings that have guided us along our way throughout time, throughout space, throughout history, throughout the times to come, our inspirations, our teachers, our guides. And may we feel them May they remind us in those moments when we need such remembrance. And God, please let them be available in the worst circumstances of life, war, famine, floods. Wherever there's peace, let one's heart be at rest and find peace. We ask this in the name, the One, the Almighty.